Vietnam vet with a cardboard sign, sitting there by the left turn line. Flag on his wheelchair flapping in the breeze, one leg missing and both hands free. No one's paying much mind to him. The VA budget's just stretched so thin, and now there's more coming back from the Mideast war. We can't make it here anymore. And that big old building was a textile mill. It fed our kids and it paid our bills, but they turned us out and they closed the doors. We can't make it here anymore. You see those pallets piled up on the loading dock? They're just gonna sit there till they rot, 'cause there's nothing to ship, nothing to pack, just busted concrete and rusted tracks. Empty storefronts around the square, there's a needle in the gutter and glass everywhere. You don't come down here unless you're looking to score. We can't make it here anymore. The bar's still open, but man, it's slow. The tip jar's light and the register's low. The bartender don't have much to say. The regular crowd's getting thinner each day. Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof. Won't pay for a drink if you gotta have proof. Try it yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore. And there's a high school girl with a bourgeois dream, just like the pictures in the magazine she found on the floor of the laundromat. A woman with kids can forget all that. If she comes up pregnant, what'll she do? Forget the career, forget about school. Can she live on faith, live on hope, high on Jesus and hooked on dope, when it's way too late to just say no? You can't make it here anymore. Should I hate a people for the shade of their skin or the shape of their eyes? Yeah, right. Now I'm stocking shirts in the Walmart store, just like the ones we made before. Except this one came from Singapore. I guess we can't make it here anymore. Should I hate a people for the shade of their skin or the shape of their eyes or the shape I'm in? Should I hate them for having our jobs today? No, I hate the men sent the jobs away. I can see them all now, they haunt my dreams, all lily white and squeaky clean. They've never known want, they'll never know need. Their shit don't stink and their kids won't bleed. Their kids won't bleed in their damn little war, and we can't make it here anymore. We'll work for food, we'll die for oil, we'll kill for power, and to us the spoils. The billionaires get to pay less tax, the working poor get to fall through the cracks. So let them eat jelly beans, let them eat cake, let them eat shit, whatever it takes. They can join the Air Force or join the Corps if they can't make it here anymore. So that's how it is, that's what we got, if the president wants to admit it or not. You can read it in the paper, read it on the wall, hear it on the wind if you're listening at all. Get out of that limo and look us in the eye, call us on a cell phone, tell us all why. In Dayton, Ohio, Portland, Maine, or a cotton gin, out on the great high plains it's done closed down, along with the school and the hospital and the swimming pool. And dust devils dance in the noonday heat, and there's rats in the alley and trash in the street, gang graffiti on a boxcar door. You can't make it here anymore.
thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining this program, we're listening to Tom Friedman talk about a carbon tax with Tom Ashbrook.
Climate side of this, which you've also been talking about, writing about for a long time, what would it do on the alternative energy side, on the climate side? What's your hope?
Look, number of countries all over the world have carbon taxes. Australia has one. Great Britain has one. China has announced plans to go in that direction this year. Until and unless everyone, has some form of restraining their carbon because it's a global problem, what we do can only be a drop in the bucket. To me, it's most important for having this effect, Tom. Even if and by the way, I called for it to be phased in very gradually, over a decade or more. To me, the impact would be this. It would be a signal to every CEO in the country. Okay, they just passed a carbon tax. What is our policy? What are we going to do? Get me a chief sustainability officer. In other words, I think it would actually trigger, in terms of reaction, by changing kind of the mindset of the country, so much more than the actual cost would be. There's examples of this, I know, in other areas. And so number one, and for me the most important thing, it would trigger, I believe, an enormous amount of innovation in clean tech and clean energy, which I think is really important when we've got this natural gas boom going on. A wonderful thing, by the way, natural gas emits about half the carbon of coal, but we don't want natural gas to be a dead end. We want it to be a bridge to a clean energy future. And so I think for all these reasons, a carbon tax, and here there's, again, a lot of Republican economists who I can cite in support of it, would really stimulate the kind of innovation and force us to pay the real cost of some of the dirty fuels that we're now consuming.
I want to look at how some of that innovation might play out, the economics of that. Let's take on some of the pushback against this, Tom.
Please.
I've got a little tape here. This is Peter Huntsman. This is the brother of the former Republican presidential candidate, John Huntsman, CEO of Huntsman Corporation, big chemical manufacturer. He's talking with Fox Business's Neil Cavuto, this is last fall, saying he, Peter Huntsman, is against a carbon tax.
You're talking about $1 trillion over a 10-year period. $1 trillion. Neil, that's almost $2 billion a week. That's a transference of wealth that's coming out of the American consumer. And I'm not really sure if anybody really knows where this money is going, what it is intended to do, or how it really cleans up the environment.
Tom Friedman, what do you say?
Well, two things. Consider the source.
Chemical business, no doubt. Plenty of petrochemicals in those clam boxes for hamburgers.
And number one, and again, part of it, I'd simply cite people like George Shultz. Part of it, we can make revenue neutral. Listen, if I had to settle for all of it being revenue neutral, I would, because on balance, I think it's going to tilt us economically toward the kind of investments that will make for a cleaner planet and a cleaner America. Look, he talks about the $2 billion transfer. Well, what he doesn't cite is, childhood asthma rates, in New York City, and what's happened to them over the last decade, or in any of our major urban areas. So,
which you're tying to fossil fuels.
To right, exactly. So, you can pluck whatever number you want out here. In the history of innovation, Tom, one of the things that's really been apparent, and if you go back to the catalytic converter, remember that?
Mm-hmm,
I don't know how old
sure.
you are, but remember when the auto industry, we decided had to clean up emissions, had to install catalytic. If you go back and read what Lee Iacocca said at the time, the catalytic converter would be the end of Western civilization as we know it. He predicted basically, this was going to cost so much for the auto industry. I don't remember the details. They're in my book, Hot, Flat, and Crowded, but I think that everyone would go bankrupt. The sun wouldn't rise. The rivers would turn backward if we imposed a catalytic converter on the auto industry. Guess what happened? Not only did we do it faster and cheaper than any of these guys predicted, but it drove a whole set of other innovations and created, by the way, spun off new industries, new products, which we were able to then sell to the rest of the world.
So you're saying...
I don't buy these scare theories at all.
You can rebate a bunch of this to those who would be hit by it. You're saying that we can bring these innovations in. We've still got questions here on competitiveness. Listener says, Tom says, what an awful idea. I can't think of anything that would do more to stifle business, cause businesses to leave the country, destroy industries. And here's Peter Huntsman, John Huntsman's brother, one more time. He's the head of a big chemical company. But here's him talking on Fox about how this carbon tax would disadvantage, he says, U.S. business.
If something like this is passed, it really needs to be on a global basis. The Indians, the Chinese, Europeans, Americans.
Yeah, because my would worry be if the Chinese get a pass, if the Indians get a pass, and it's all left to guys like you, we're the ones at the disadvantage.
We're the ones at the disadvantage, and companies like ours that are international, we've got options.
Okay, if America does this and the rest of the world doesn't, our companies are disadvantaged and we're in competitive trouble, Tom. What do you say? Peter Huntsman there.
Well, first of all, as I said, China's announced plans. They haven't laid out the details yet to impose a carbon tax on their own companies because they can't breathe anymore, number one. Number two, I have one word for Mr. Huntsman, Denmark. Denmark has the highest carbon and energy taxes of any country in the world, and little Denmark leads the world on a per capita basis. I'm pretty sure this is true, but it's certainly very high up, if not. In global energy companies, whether it's Novozymes, their biotechnology energy company, Danesco, or their wind turbine companies, their incredibly efficient waste-to-energy companies. Why is that? Because what happened for little Denmark? Oh, my God. They should, if this guy's argument was true, Denmark should be bankrupt today. Little Denmark, how can they compete in the world at their cost structure, with their wages, with their unions? Well, guess what happened? These energy taxes forced their companies to become incredibly efficient. And when they became that efficient, they discovered, because the rest of the world has these same problems, they suddenly had exportable global industries. So, clean energy exports are not a small percentage of little Denmark's exports today. So I just don't buy it at all.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Did you hear them talking about it on the radio? Did you try to read the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over. Day by day, I hear the voices rising, starting with a whisper like it did before. Day by day, we count the dead and dying, ship the bodies home while an inward talk keeps going. You hear him talking about it on the radio. Could your eyes believe the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over. One by one, I see the old ghost rising, stumbling across big muddy where the light gets dim. Day after day, another mama's crying. She's lost her precious child to a war that has no end. Did you hear him talking about it on the radio? Did you stop to read the writing at the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've seen this all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Tom Friedman says, let's go big with the carbon tax, use it to pay, balance the books, and leverage a lot of change. Really, it is fascinating how right down the middle the reaction here is online. Let's go on air. Paul in Columbia, South Carolina, you're on the air with Tom Friedman. What do you think, Paul?
Hi, how are you? I have 2 points, and I'll be quick and concise. First of all, no matter how you couch the redistribution of the, and I never thought I would agree with Mr. Huntsman or anyone on Fox, no matter how you couch the redistribution of the funds that come in from a carbon tax, it's not going to pass. I mean, it's just not realistic to think that we can raise any taxes in the current climate. Secondly, I think this winds up acting as a broad-based VAT. Almost everything in our economy is made with carbon, you know, carbon-based power.
Yep.
And how is everyone going to make the changeover? How is this going to change anything? So
you mean how do they make it technically, Paul, on the factory floor? Is that what you mean?
I'm sorry?
How do they make the changeover technically, mechanically on the factory floor?
Sure, technically. Just because you add 25 cents to the production of almost everything in our economy, including gasoline, you know, pipes,
yep,
everything, it's just going to get passed along to the consumer. They're not going to say, uh-oh, we better get nuclear power, or we better become more efficient.
Paul, in South Carolina, let us pick it up. Tom Friedman, hold the political piece for a moment, though it is a huge one. But what about just the practical side of this? Paul's got an interesting point there. You know how fossil fuel dependent our economy, our manufacturing, everything else is. You put this in place, and maybe it's just a bet. Maybe it doesn't change all that. Maybe it's too complicated, too embedded to change that.
Well, you know, it's a very legitimate question from Paul, and I would simply say a couple things. One is, and I thought about this in writing the column, personally, we probably need a VAT. Let's just start here. We need a new source of income, okay? We got to generate it somehow. If you can get it from all from rich people, God bless you. If you think you're going to get it by cutting Social Security and Medicare, I want to see that. But something's got to give here. So that's where I start. Now, some people actually think we do need a consumption tax, a national sales tax. Excuse me, that's one route. I'd be happy. I'd be much happier if we could get it by taxing bullets and guns out the wazoo. But it seems to me carbon is the most likely one because of the multiple benefits you get. Not that you wouldn't get it from bullets and guns too. But with a carbon tax, there's so many ways to do it. You can do it by just focusing on power plants, and that would affect electricity rates. And Paul is right; that will cascade, you know, through the economy. What you cannot predict and what he can't predict, and here's where I would disagree with Paul, is the innovative effects. You know, just as an aside, Tom, I spent yesterday at HAS, Health and Human Services,
okay.
HHS, yeah. Mm-hmm. I really am not – one thing you and I have never talked about is the health care bill, Obamacare,
yeah.
The American
– No, we haven't.
You know, the health care act.
Affordable Care Act, Obamacare.
And to the extent I focused on it, to me it was all about access. We're going to give more people insurance, and we're going to insure them this way. And, oh, by the way, over on the side, we're going to try a few pilot projects for innovations around electronic health records and health care data and whatnot. And that was kind of my sort of understanding of it. So I met yesterday at HHS with a group of healthcare startups, all of which have been triggered by the Obamacare Act. It is massive. There's been a massive explosion in healthcare data management, information management companies triggered by the Obamacare Act. And it may, in time, we may look back at Obamacare, and by the way, I don't know how it's going to work out, and I'm not an expert on that at all, but it may be as important for the innovation it triggers in health data, in health records that are cost-saving as it is on the access side. And so what I don't buy is when people say, you're just going to do this carbon tax and it's not going to have any effect and no one will do anything in response. I really disagree with that.
Let's get a call from Ithaca, New York, if we can here. We've got Carl calling in. Carl, hi. Carl, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I kind of see this idea in as part of a bigger program. I think it has to be couched in a huge sort of publicity. What Lee Iacocca said is representative of business. They're there to make money for themselves. I hate to be that extreme, but I think as a society, we've become middle-aged, complacent. We've gone from, hey, let's try this, but, you know, from can-do to if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's exactly what Iacocca said in so many words, you know. And obviously it is broke. The automobile industry has come along, and I always knew they were capable, but from the back in the 70s and 80s, and we knew we had a problem, they did everything they could to buy Congress along with the oil industry, and suppress anything. And it's finally come out, obviously, 20, 30 years late, that we can do better with, you know, with fuel. So I kind of just want to say, and I'll get off the air, that this needs to be couched in quite a campaign. And as an example, when the BP thing happened and all these oil sort of dependent senators were fighting Obama, you know, the Massey Energy mine collapse happened, killed 29 people. It got knocked off the radar by BP.
Yeah, we've got a lot. There's a long record. Carl, let us pick it up before the break here. Tom, what about this basic idea? We don't do big change like this. It's just not what we are anymore as a country.
Well, I agree with everything Carl just said, including and the. Okay, which is really, you know, one of my points, that and one of my major points is that, you know, Tom, we've become so used to our politics being paralyzed that we don't even ask big questions anymore. And so we're so used to just settling for the worst suboptimal compromise negotiated at the 11th hour with no due diligence that we now think that is normal. And when you do that time and time again, year after year, you end up with a suboptimal country. And as Carl said, what this needs, and all your other callers, they have very legitimate points. I'm struggling with this myself, so I don't think it's like, you know, this is a silver bullet or whatnot, a nice introduction, but that's not how I'm presenting it, you know. But I'm just saying we have these problems, we have these potential solutions. Let's go for something big, and the president needs to be out there and sell it, educate people, make the connections, and please don't tell me it's on the White House website, okay?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with New York Times columnist Tom Friedman about how maybe to save America, he says, a carbon tax on gas, on oil, on coal. Lots of feedback online. Tom, DJ says, yes, should have done it 10 years ago. But David says, why does everyone think a new tax will help the country? The real problem is how much money the average household makes. And I wanted, Tom, just to play this for you to begin to get to the politics of this. Here's the president. This was after his election last November, saying he would address climate change, but not at the expense of the economy and jobs. Here's Obama.
I think the American people right now have been so focused and will continue to be focused on our economy and jobs and growth that, you know, if the message is somehow we're going to ignore jobs and growth simply to address climate change, I don't think anybody's going to go for that. I won't go for that.
The president, yes, we want to act on climate change. No, we won't hurt the economy. And I'm sure you remember this, Tom, but Jay Carney, White House spokesman, saying right around the same time, quoting him here, exact words, we would never propose a carbon tax and have no intention of proposing one. If it's such a good idea, why not even a newly reelected Democratic president doing it or going there, Tom?
Well. So where do I start? There was a superstorm that hit the Northeast, you call them, last year, Storm Sandy. And we had to pay for the cleanup, we as a country. And that's what we do for our brothers and sisters. We help them wherever the crisis hits. The total cleanup bill was, exactly $60 billion. That was exactly what the Senate and House approved and the president signed. At the same time, the exact same time, President Obama rammed through his preferred tax, a tax on high-income earners, top 2% of the population.
Yep.
It was going to raise $600 billion over 10 years. In other words, $60 billion a year. Oh, let's see. What does that mean, Tom? That means that the entire tax increase that President Obama passed this year went to paying for the reconstruction of one storm. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So $60 billion bill for Sandy, $60 billion in income tax increase by Obama. So it's what I call small ball. And, you know, you really have a choice because you can say we're not going to increase this on him and we're not going to increase this on her. And look at me, I'm standing up to defend the American people. But Obama just came out now and said we're going to change the Social Security calculator for cost of living, which is going to, in effect, be a tax on your Social Security. So which do you want? I mean, do you want to retire later, retire with less, or get everybody to pay a little bit more over time so we can do a lot more things? And also, by the way, create jobs with this. The idea that a carbon tax is only a job killer is simply defied by the examples of all these other countries that have implemented it. So, look, if that's the game Obama wants to play, then that's great. And I can't wait to visit the section in the Obama Library about big ideas that I thought of doing but never did. That's going to be a big room, Tom.
The Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. at Brown's Chapel in Selma, Alabama, ironically speaks of dying. 1 month and 3 years later, he would fall to an assassin's bullet.
Deep down in our nonviolent creed is the conviction that there are some things so dear some things so precious, some things so eternally true that they're worth dying for. And if a man happens to be 36 years old, as I happen to be, and some great truth stands before the door of his life, some great opportunity to stand up for that which is right, he's afraid his home will get bombed, or he's afraid that he will lose his job, or he's afraid that he will get shot or beat down by state troopers. He may go on and live until he's 80. But he's just as dead at 36 as he would be at 80, and the cessation of breathing in his life is merely the belated announcement of an earlier death of the spirit. He died. A man dies when he refuses to stand up for that which is right. A man dies when he refuses to stand up for justice. A man dies when he refuses to take a stand for that which is true. So we're going to stand up right here amid horses. We're going to stand up right here in Alabama amid the billy clubs. We're going to stand up right here in Alabama amid police dogs if they have them. We're going to stand up amid tear gas. We're going to stand up amid anything that they can muster up, letting the world know that we are determined to be free.
More from Great Speeches and Interviews after these messages.